Right now we're in the middle of a conversation about this idea of prayer and this concept that God is not distant, but that we can actually talk to God. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been kind of unpacking this. And as we've been unpacking this, we're focused not just on this idea that we can talk to God, but this incredible thing that Jesus Christ brings into this conversation, that God will actually talk to us. That not only will we communicate with Him, but that we can begin to actually hear Him communicating with us. This unbelievable opportunity that Jesus Christ begins to teach His followers is possible. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been looking at this. And in week one, we kind of walked through the passages that show us that this is possible, that this can be our reality. And we looked at a lot of different verses about that, but one in particular in John 16, verse 15, where Jesus says, "All that belongs to the Father is mine. This is why I said the Spirit will tell you whatever He receives from me." And Jesus is saying, listen, I'm about to go away, but when I go away, you're going to hear from me, and my Spirit is going to inform your life. He's going to speak to you. Not only are you going to be able to communicate to me, not only are you going to be able to walk right into God's presence and to communicate to Him, not only is He going to hear you, but you're going to be able to hear from me. Now that's not reality for most of us. And so as we've been walking through this, we've been kind of asking this question, okay, if this is possible, how do we get there? If this is possible, then why is it so rare, and what needs to change in my life or in my prayer life to get me to the point where this is happening? Because this isn't necessarily happening for most of us. And in this conversation, we've been looking specifically at this passage where Jesus Christ begins to teach His disciples. He begins to walk them through this idea of prayer. And he comes to them because they've asked Him this question, how do you pray? Because they realize that when they see how Jesus prays and the way that they pray, they don't line up. It's not the same. It's not the same experience. And so they come to Him and say, how do we pray? And so He begins to walk them through this. And in our conversation so far, we've been focusing on this passage where He's teaching them how to pray. And in doing so, He's giving them all sorts of principles that inform this conversation and how we approach God and the relationship that God has for us. And over the last couple of weeks, we've looked at some of those principles. One, that this conversation isn't a conversation that just kind of happens on the fly. That if you expect to have this kind of conversation where you're talking to Him and you're hearing from Him, then it means that you're going to have to make time for it, that it's going to have to become a priority, that you're going to have to get away, and it needs to be, you need to eliminate the distractions. And Andy Stanley kind of walked us through that a couple of weeks ago, this idea of going and closing the door and spending time with Him. And then beyond that, we've looked at this idea that if this is going to be the conversation, if this is going to be our reality, then we need to understand who we're talking to. And when we come into the conversation, we need to understand how big He is, how great He is, how incredible He is. But yet at the same time, understand that as big as He is, He's still our dad. And that the relationship in which this conversation takes place is not the relationship of me and my God, but of me and my dad. And that He's our Father. And last week we walked through this and we talked about this reality, and we looked at this passage in Romans chapter 8, verse 15, where Paul says, "So you've not received a spirit that makes you fearful slaves. Instead, you received God's Spirit when He adopted you as His own children." You've been adopted as His children. And so the relationship that we have in this conversation is a relationship where now we call Him Abba, Father. Now, there's only three places in the Bible where this word Abba, Father is used. Twice, it's Paul explaining to us that we have the opportunity to talk to God this way. The only other place in the entire Bible that this word is used is when Jesus Christ is praying in the garden, and the way that he addresses his dad is Abba, Father. It's almost this pet name, or this special name that Jesus Christ has for his dad. And Paul says, this is how you get to address him now. This is how you get to talk to him now. And as big as he is, there's still, as grand as he is, as incredible as he is, as much as we need him, he's our dad. And so we don't have anything to fear. John tries to explain this to us in 1 John 4:18. He says, such love has no fear because perfect love expels all fear. If we are afraid, it is for fear of punishment. And this shows that we have not fully experienced his perfect love. And John says, listen, yeah, he's huge, he's big, but he's your dad. And this is the relationship in which we have this conversation. And that's what we talked about last week. And last week we walked through this, and we'll walk through this reality that you get to have this different kind of conversation with him. And I challenged you this week to kind of walk through this week and look at the way that you're talking to God, to look at how you pray, and to say, to have an honest evaluation with yourself if that's how you would talk to your dad, or if that's the way that you would talk to God. And it was interesting because as we walked out of last week, I was a little bit frustrated. And as we walked through the week, I continued to be a little bit frustrated because as we walked out of here on Sunday and the conversations that I had following our talk last week, and as I walked into different conversations throughout the week, it seemed like a lot of us were looking at this idea that God is our dad, and we walked out of here and said, okay, well, yeah, I kind of know that. I kind of get that. And it frustrated me because I don't think you do. I don't think we do. I include myself in that. And it frustrated me because the more I look at this and the more I experience this in my own walk with God, with my dad, the more I realize that if we're going to have the kind of relationship that Jesus Christ had with his dad, if we're going to pray the way that Jesus Christ says we can pray, if we're going to have this kind of conversation where not only we're talking to him, but he's talking to us, I believe it's absolutely foundational, entirely, incredibly crucial that we understand and that we embrace this relationship of him as our dad, and that we begin to live our lives with this not only being part of the relationship, but with this being the primary relationship. And so I was frustrated because I thought a lot of us walked out and just kind of shrugged it off because, I mean, we start our prayers with Father. And I don't know, as you walked through this week, if you took the time to evaluate those conversations. I don't know if you took the time as you were praying to ask yourself, okay, wait a second, am I praying like I would pray to my, like I would talk to my dad, or am I praying like I would pray to God? But even for me, as I walked through this past week, and it's been an interesting week for me, even as I walked through this past week, I did that. And even for me, and being on this journey for several years now, I found myself in several situations, and I found myself at several points talking like I was talking to this God who is not necessarily distant, but this God who's grand and all these different things, but I wasn't talking to him like he was my dad. And I don't know what your experience was, but I think for most of us, if we were to really take that seriously, I think we'd find that our primary conversation or our primary relationship when we have conversations with our dad is not the relationship of father and son or father and daughter, but of Lord. Like he's my Lord, he's my God, and then I answer to him. And so what I did is I as I prepared for today, I decided that one, we were going to kind of revisit that for a second, and then I was going to give you kind of a little bit of an example from my own past to help you see different things that have shown up in my prayer life that have shown me that I may be missing it. And I'm a big fan of Jeff Foxworthy, so I kind of put it together like that. All right? And I don't have 10 of them. I only have 6 of them. But we're going to walk through 6 things that I've seen in my past that may be part of your prayer life as well, that may be red flags or indicators that we're not talking to him like he's our Father. And you say, well, what does it matter? I mean, what do the words matter? The words do matter. And the reason the words matter is that they show us something about what we believe. They show us something about our heart. They show us something about who we think we're talking to and why we think we're talking to him. And so I put this together. It's kind of lighthearted, and don't take it too seriously. But I'll explain to you as we walk through it kind of how I've seen it in my life. And these are things that show that you might not be talking to him like a father. Number one, if you use the word Lord over 15 times as you pray, you might not be talking to him as your father. Right? If you talk to someone else the way that some of us talk to God, it would just freak them out. Because it would sound something like this. Chris, how's your day going today, Chris? Chris, I'm just really excited to see you today, Chris. Chris, do you understand what I'm saying? And for me, this was one of the first things that I identified in my conversation with God that showed me that maybe I wasn't having a conversation. I was just saying what I thought I should say. And I definitely wasn't talking to him the way that I would talk to my father, because my father would just, he would have a serious conversation with me if I talked to him that way about what was happening mentally. Because I grew up in a culture where that was kind of how you prayed. And so it's, Lord, I just want to thank you for this day, Lord. And Lord, we want to pray for this, Lord. And it walked through it like that. And in order for me to begin to shift my mindset away from, okay, this is me and my God, I had to change that about the way that I prayed. Because that's not the way I talk to someone who's personal. That's not the way I talk to my dad. Another one. If people at work would believe you're speaking another language when they heard you pray, you might not be talking to him as if he's your father. I don't know why, but for some reason, when we shift into praying, all of a sudden, words that we would never, ever use in any other situation in our lives come to the forefront. And so we begin to use words like sacrificial and sanctification and redemption and these words that for some of us, if we're honest, we really don't even know what they mean. We just know that we've heard other people say them, so it seems like we should say them too. And we'll say things like grace and peace, and we don't necessarily even know what we're communicating. We've just heard it before. And so that's kind of what we do. And it's weird because we get caught up in this. And it was funny because as I was studying for this series, I got really, really upset with the translators of the NIV Bible. Because with the NIV Bible, the reason that the NIV Bible exists, and for those of you who are new to this whole thing, there are several different translations of the Greek Bible into Hebrew. Into Hebrew, that would be backwards. Of the Greek Bible into English, right? And each of them have different things that they do really, really well. And each of them have different reasons why they exist. The NIV Bible was written because of the fact that at that time, most of the people were still using the King James Version Bible. Now, the King James Version Bible, if you have one of those, we actually have a really special program here at Hoboken Grace for you. It's called the Bible Exchange. If you have a Bible that you don't understand because it uses words like thee and thou, like every third or fourth word, then we have a Bible Exchange program. You can bring that to us, and we'll give you a Bible that makes sense. All right? And the reason that the NIV came about is that people were reading this Bible that didn't make any sense to them, and they were like, man, the Bible's so hard to understand. But the reason it was so hard to understand is because it was written like in English that was used hundreds and hundreds of years ago, not in English that we use today. And so they said, well, we need to have a Bible that people can easily read, a Bible that's written the way that the Bible actually was written. Because for some of us, we read the Bible and we think, oh, that must be the way that it was written. It was written in really big words. That's not true. As a matter of fact, the Greek Bible is written in some of the simplest Greek you could possibly use. Why? Because it was written to people of a very simple background. These people were in slave situations. This was an oppressed, Israel at this point was an oppressed nation. And the writers of the Bible wrote in simple Greek so that everyone would be able to understand it, so that it would be available to everyone, so that everyone would be able to access it. And so when the NIV translators came along, they said there needs to be a Bible that people can read in words that they use, which is incredible. And one of the great things about the NIV Bible is that it's really easy to read through, and so you can take in a lot of God's word. But I became really frustrated because when the NIV translators got to the Lord's Prayer, this passage that we've been studying through for the last couple weeks, they totally chickened out and they blew it. Because there's something weird about prayer. And so when they got to the Lord's Prayer, they interpreted it exactly the same way that it was in the King James Version Bible. And they used words that they would have never used anywhere else in their translation. And they kept it sounding big. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And they used thy and thou, whereas they never would have used it anywhere else, because there's something weird about our understanding of prayer, and there's something that's been taught to us in this, and it really doesn't matter. I mean, even if today's the first time you walked into church in years and years and years, maybe the first time you've ever walked into church, you've experienced this. And for you, the idea of prayer, when you think of prayer, you probably think of big words. Because for some reason, when people pray on TV, it goes to even greater lengths, and the words get bigger and bigger and bigger. But that's not the way that Jesus gave us the Lord's Prayer. It was simple. It was really simple. And it was in words that we'd use every single day. Number three. If your voice increases by 10 decibels, I don't know if you've ever been around this. I come from a really, really, really traditional church background. And so when I grew up, man, when people would pray, you almost have to cover your ears. I don't know if they thought that God couldn't hear them or what, but I remember very clearly, like being at home one day and I was going to pray. And so I prayed the way that I did. And my mom looked at me and said, "Why are you yelling?" And I said, "Well, that's how people pray." And she said, you don't have to yell. But if your voice increases, you may not believe him about this. If you have to stand. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in these situations, but for me, it wasn't the standing thing so much. I grew up in a church where when you prayed, you had to pause for a certain amount of time before you prayed. And so whenever someone would come up to pray, they would stop. And then they would pray. And the idea was that, okay, you refocus yourself, you focus on God, you kind of let the distractions fade out. And so I did that for a long time growing up. And it wasn't until I began to actually have influence on the people around me that I began to realize what this communicated to me and to those around me about this idea of prayer. Because as I interacted with people and as people saw me praying this way, especially people who were first coming to know Christ, they got this idea that God wasn't right there. And that's not what God teaches. And there was this idea that, man, you needed to stand, or you needed to do something special in order to be able to go to God, when the truth is that if he's your dad, he's right there. And you don't have to do anything special before you talk to your dad. So if you find yourself in that situation, you might not fully understand him and believe him that you have this relationship. If the idea of telling God a joke terrifies you, you might not believe him that he's your father. Now, some of you say, wait a second, now I don't see Jesus telling jokes. Part of that is actually because of the fact that the Bible is translated from Greek to English, and you miss out on Jesus' humor. The humor that was used in Jesus' day is sarcasm. And Jesus, oftentimes, as he responded to people, would play off of words over and over and over again. And a lot of the ways that he responds to the Pharisees is really sarcastic and would have been really funny to the people who heard it. But we don't get to see that. But even if you throw that out, even if we don't know that, right? Even if we don't get to see that, I mean, look at the way he lives his life. He's messing with people. There's this story in the Bible where Jesus comes up and his followers are fishing. That's what they do. They're fishermen. They've been fishing all night. They're professional fishermen. They know it backwards and forwards. Jesus isn't a fisherman. He's a carpenter. And so he comes out and they've been fishing all night, and he comes out to them and he says, hey, how's it going? Obviously, they're not very excited. They're not in a very good mood. And they're like, it's going really bad. We haven't caught anything all night. And he says, oh, throw your net on the other side of the boat. And I can imagine, as they heard him say that, they looked at each other and said, I can't stand this guy. But just to kind of, whatever, all right, we're following you, so we got to do what he says. And they throw the net on the other side of the boat. The net fills up. They almost sink the boat. They catch so many fish. He's just messing with them. There's another point where there's someone who comes and asks Jesus a question about paying taxes and whether his followers pay taxes. And so Jesus turns to Peter, who's beside him, and says, hey, listen, go catch a fish. Peter goes and catches a fish. The money to pay the taxes is in the fish. He's just messing with people. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's at a party one day. He's at this wedding, and all of a sudden, they run out of wine, and his mom comes and talks to him, and he says, well, you know, it's not my time yet, but this is really important. Boom, wine. I mean, this is a fun dude. And even outside of that, I mean, look at the people who love to hang out with him. There are two groups of people who love to be around Jesus Christ: kids and partiers. Right? Those two kinds of people, they don't like to be around super serious people. But for most of us, we operate in this relationship that, okay, this is me and this is my God. And so the idea that I would tell a joke to God is just, I mean, that, what, wait. But you would with your dad. If the idea that you would talk to God about what happened in the Final Four last night is just totally out of the question, then you may not believe him. Because you would talk to your dad about that. And I think for a lot of us, we think we get it, but we don't. And we're not being honest with ourselves about this conversation. We're not being honest with ourselves about how we actually view God. And we're not being honest with ourselves about what he says is possible. And it scares me. Because if you don't believe him about this, I don't think you can experience what he says is possible in this conversation. Because the conversation he wants to have with you is the conversation of a father and a son, or a father and a daughter. Let me give you two more that are a little more serious. If you don't love praying, you probably don't believe him that this is the conversation he wants to have with you. If your prayers are over 50% requests, you probably don't believe him that this is the conversation he wants to have with you. Jesus actually talks about that right before he gives us the Lord's Prayer. In Matthew 6:7, he's talking about the people, the way that people pray. And he says, listen, don't be like people, don't be like those guys. Don't pray the way that they pray. They say the same thing over and over and over again. They think that that's going to matter. It doesn't matter. And then he says something crazy. He says, don't be like them, for your Father knows exactly what you need even before you ask him. He says, when it comes to this whole idea of requests, listen, if you believe me that he's your dad, then you believe me that he's here. If you believe me that he's your dad, then you believe me that he knows you better than you know yourself. If you believe me that this is the relationship that you have with him, then you know and you understand that he cares about you more than you care about yourself. He says, so, you know, don't let that dominate the conversation. That's not what he really wants to talk about. He's going to take care of those things. He's going to meet your needs. This conversation, it's about something else. Now, for a lot of us, we hear him say that, and we say, what would I pray about? I mean, if you took requests out of our prayer requests, for most of us, I mean, we've got maybe one, two lines. And those one or two lines is like, thank you for today. Thank you for tomorrow. I don't know where to go with this. So what do you mean? What would it be about if it's not about that? And what I want to do today is I want to take you to another passage where Jesus actually says something crazy about prayer. Because in that, I think he explains to us what it's actually about and what he's actually trying to do, or what he actually wants us to experience as we walk through this thing called prayer. It's actually found in John chapter 15, and we're going to start off in verse 5. And Jesus is talking about this relationship, and he's talking about you and me, and he's talking about him, and he's talking about what he wants to see happen, and he's talking about what he wants you to experience. He starts off and he says, yes, I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. And it's interesting, when he talks about fruit here, the thing that you need to understand is that when the Bible talks about fruit as it relates to our relationship with God, the fruit that they're talking about is the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness. These are also things that the Bible calls the desires of our heart. And when Jesus Christ talks about what he wants to see happen in your life and in my life, he says, let me kind of give you a little bit of a picture of this. He says, it's kind of like I'm the vine and you're the branches. He says, and this whole thing, the fact that I came for you, the fact that I'm about to give my life for you, everything that I'm doing, including this idea of prayer, because he's about to talk about prayer, he says, all of it is about you, just about you soaking life out of me. All of it, every single aspect of it, is about connection. And about you being restored to me and me being connected to you in such a way that the life that's mine just flows out of me and into you. And there's nothing that separates us. And there's nothing that comes between us. And you experience this fruit in your life because of the fact that you're this connected. And this conversation, it just flows back and forth. And I am in you, and you are in me, and you hear from me, and I hear from you, and we're walking and experiencing life in this incredible connection. And as a result of that, there's all this beautiful fruit. As he continues to talk about it, he talks about the fact that, you know, if this isn't true, if you miss out on this, then you just wither. That he says, anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away like a useless branch and withers. He says, you don't have the ability to experience this kind of life on your own. And if you try it, you're just going to dry up. You're not going to make it. And then he says this crazy thing about prayer. He says, but if you remain in me and my words remain in you, you may ask for anything you want and it will be granted. Now we hear that and it just blows our mind. For a lot of you, you hear that and you look at what you've prayed and you're like, well, wait a second, that doesn't add up because I didn't get what I asked for. I didn't get what I wanted. He didn't give me what I asked him to give me. She wasn't healed. He died. And I've heard a lot of different people explain this passage in a lot of different ways. And one of the things that I've heard said about this passage is that, man, if you believe enough, if you're close enough to him, if you have enough faith, then you know what? Everything is going to fall into place. Every prayer that you ever pray is going to be answered. But I think that's a shallow understanding of this passage. Because what Jesus is saying is that this whole thing, we see from the other passage, it isn't about us just getting what we ask for. This whole thing is about connection. It's about this relationship where life is just flowing back and forth. Where we're intimately connected to him in such a way that he's beginning to inform our lives in such a way that we live the way Jesus Christ lives, where Jesus Christ says, listen, I don't really do anything on my own. I can't really do anything on my own. He actually says almost exactly what he says in this verse. He says, I can't, you know, it's not just for you, it's for me too. I can't do anything on my own. I only do what I see the Father tell me to do. I only say what I hear the Father tell me to say. I only go where the Father tells me to go. So outside of that, I've got nothing. I can't do anything on my own. And what Jesus is saying, he's saying, guys, this is the same thing's true for you. You can't do anything on your own. But you have the opportunity to be connected to me and to be connected to the Father in such a way that he begins to tell you what to say and where to go and how to get there and what to do. And all of a sudden, this relationship becomes so, so personal. And you know God so well. And you hear from God so clearly. That you can ask whatever you want because you're walking side by side with him. And you're going to want exactly what he wants. Because your heart is going to beat exactly the way his heart beats. And you're going to see the plan the way he sees the plan. And all of a sudden, your prayer is going to look a lot like the prayer that we see Jesus pray in the garden where he says, Father, Abba, Father, if there's any other way besides this cross, if there's any other way for this to happen, then I pray that it would happen. But you know what? I trust you. And so what I really want to happen, what I really ask for, is that your will would be done. And Jesus is saying, this is the same thing that's true for me is true for you. And this whole conversation, this whole idea of prayer, it's not about asking. It's not about the fact that, okay, God, I need this, and I need that, and I need No, 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 no. It's about you experiencing Him. And Him experiencing you. It's about you experiencing a new dad. A dad who's never going to leave you. A dad who's always going to love you. And a dad who loves talking to you about what's happening in your life spiritually as much as he loves talking to you about how you love the Final Four or how you love shoes or how you love purses or what's happening in your career or why you're mad at your boss today. He's just as interested in those things because he's your dad. And the truth is, you see, a spoiled child believes that love is that I get everything that I've asked for. A spoiled child is the one who believes that, you know what, my parents love me if I get everything that I wanted. But as we grow up, we realize that what we wanted wasn't the gifts. What we wanted wasn't the toys. What we wanted wasn't the car. What we wanted was our dad. And this dad gets it. And so he comes to you and he says, listen, I want to be your father. And no matter what happens, I'm going to love you. And no matter where you are, you can climb up on my lap. And you can lay your head on my shoulder. And we can talk. And we can talk about anything. Because I love you. That's what prayer is about. That's the invitation. Will you pray with me? Father, it's unbelievable that you it's unbelievable that you've adopted us. It's unbelievable that you've given us the opportunity to talk to you the way that Jesus talks to you. We're so far from experiencing that. We're so far from this relationship where you just flow into us and we're intimately connected to you. But you're bringing us forward. You're moving us forward. You're continuing to pull us along, and we just want to say thank you. We believe you, and we want to experience this. And so we just come to you today as your children, and we say thank you. We love you. In Jesus' name, amen. My challenge to you this week as we continue to kind of walk this journey together is that this week you'll leave behind the requests. No requests. Don't ask God to do anything. Don't ask God for anything. Don't ask God to change anything. No requests. Just leave them behind for an entire week. Just 1 week. And walk in the conversation and talk about maybe some meaningless things with your dad. And just share your heart. If there's something heavy on your heart, something that you're worried about, don't ask him to change it. Don't ask him to fix it. Just talk to him about how you feel about it. It's the difference of, God, will you please do something about this situation? And it moves from that to, God, I'm really worried about this situation. God, I really want for this to get better. God, I really want this job, as opposed to, God, please give me this job. And the conversation begins to move away from what it's been to a conversation with our dad. Just 1 week. And see if the conversation begins to change just a little bit.